What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Squanch Wisecracks Rick and Morty podcast. My name is Jared. I'm joined here with the Squanchers. We got Alec.
Hey.
And Dr. Nihilism himself, Mr. Burns, Michael Burns.
Hello.
And the bad boy of 19th century Danish philosophy scholarship.
Yeah, super hardcore.
Yeah. No, I was going to say that when Austin, his old roommate, who's one of the hosts of our movie podcast, came into town, he was like, I don't know if you know about this about Michael, but he really had a moment with his Kierkegaard book. It was a big deal.
Oh, I had a really, really great 9 months where I felt like the LeBron James of obscure existentialism. So really life-changing stuff. I'm still living off the residuals from that book.
Oh, cool, cool. Did you have like Kierkegaard groupies and stuff?
Not groupies. I did have people at one point that would email to want to do like their PhD with me and one of my colleagues. And it was weird because at a certain point, some of them were like around my age.
Hmm.
And that felt weird.
Interesting.
Yeah.
They want to do your, you already did your PhD and people were like, I want you to.
Yeah. They like wanted me to like be there. It was in
their
the
supervisor.
UK, yeah. Their supervisor for their PhDs.
So, okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Never
will
did
you
it,
supervise my PhD, Michael Burns?
Anytime. You already passed. You always have already been passed, doctor.
All right, guys. So today we're doing a full mailbag episode. Mm-hmm. We have covered every episode of Rick and Morty. We're very excited for season 4. And we have all these emails backed up that we did not get a chance to go through. So we thought we would do one more episode to talk about all the things that you guys asked to talk about that we haven't had time to talk about. And so that's the episode today. So let's get right into it. First, let's go with our voicemails. So our voicemail service, even though if you wanted to send us a voicemail that we'll read when season 4 comes out, it's 213-534-8807. So let's start off with our first voicemail from Brandon. Go, Brandon.
Hi there. My name is Brandon, and I just wanted to respond to your the great genital debate, as it were.
Very important.
So my first point is, yes, I would definitely sacrifice my penis for the lives of billions of aliens or whatever, but not because of some great ethical, you know, choice or because I feel obligated to. The main point of my argument is that it's not a sacrifice at all. In the episode itself, we see that they can heal like bullet wounds, you know, basically your body, whole body being destroyed like very easily. So at the very least, they could give you your natural penis back. If but you, then, you know, you just have to go through the surgery and then they could, you know, just rebuild you. Your regular penis, I guess. I feel like that's definitely not beyond their abilities. However, even if that weren't an option as far as, like, the hospital's technology, the mechanical penises that they had available to you
are,
like, probably just a huge upgrade based on just the technology of the Rick and Morty universe. Like, it's not like you're not going to be able to, it's not like they just staple a vibrator onto like your gash where the, your fucking
Brandon.
It like, it's going to feel good. It's going to do all of the things that your penis did. And you don't have to worry about it. Like as you get older, you know, losing functionality, you can just like get maintenance on that shit.
All right, I'm going to cut him off right there. Thank you, Brendan, for that. So for those of you who don't know what the great genital debate is, this is something that has come up in our last couple episodes, and it is the question of basically what Jerry goes through in the second interdimensional cable episode, which is, would you save billions of people's lives if it means you had to cut off your dick and donate it to a philanthropist? So I think this brings up an interesting question, another element into the great genital debate, and that is, yeah, like, did we ever talk, I mean, I wasn't on this episode, did you guys talk about the merits of using, of getting another dick? Like,
I don't remember talking about that, did we?
Who was I talking to?
I think I was on that one.
It was, yeah, it was you, Ryan, and Alec.
Yeah.
I was on vacation.
Oh.
See, I don't think we got into that part of it.
Oh, you left it on the table. Okay, so you know, if your leg gets blown off, I think people are generally cool with getting a new leg. Well, okay, that's another thing. I guess if your dick gets blown off, then people will be like, all right, I'll just take whatever I can get. But if you're sacrificing your own, it's almost like sacrificing your own child and just saying, oh, well, someone will just give me a new child.
I mean, I wonder if you have like a phantom dong syndrome sort of thing where you lose your original penis. And even if you get a technologically advanced new one, I feel like it's like there's nothing like the real thing. There's nothing like having a part of you that was biologically created. And I feel like it's going to maybe seem cool at first, but after a while, you're going to long for what was once yours.
So
you're going to long.
Mark the date, November 29th, 2018. In the next 100 years, at some point, people will willingly cut off their dicks for cyborg dicks. It's going to be this whole like consumer biohacking movement where it's cool to get prosthetic eyes like Deus Ex, and people are just going to be walking around with robot dicks, and they're going to do it without any greater sacrifice. So I don't know. I think the technology, you're discrediting the technology, Burns, when you say it can never be the real thing.
I think it would just be different. It would not be, I don't even think better or worse, but I think that we're never going to have the technology in the next 100 years to where it's like a seamless transition or something like that.
Even if it was, I feel like this is the last bastion of sanctity for humanity. You know, people are willing to almost give up or just forget all things that are organically human. But I think the penis is going to be the last thing to go.
Wow. Well, did you all hear that this week, a Chinese scientist biohacked a baby using like CRISPR gene editing technology?
I saw that headline and did not click on it.
Yeah, it was sent to me. I clicked on it. I read upwards of 111 words of it. So I'm an expert. But yeah, so I mean, I think you're right. I don't think we're that far from being able to create like a test tube or like lab penis. And then people like apply fingers and hands to people after their hands get chopped off. I think it's going to be pretty soon that we have this.
Yeah.
But Jared, since you didn't answer the original question.
Yeah.
Let's just forget about the advances in technology for a second.
Okay.
Would you cut off your dick to save billions of
lives?
No,
we did go over this. We went over this in the last episode.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Did you specify it has to be cut off by yourself with a plastic knife?
No. Oh, fuck. No.
To save billions.
It has to be something akin to the
Antichrist. I think I said something like there is a limit. Billions, sure, but anything less than 50 million.
I asked this question to some friends after that podcast, and I noticed the younger people were. The more they were like, no way I'd ever cut my dick off. And like, once you get to like mid-30s, people are just like, yeah, whatever. I guess.
Yeah, it's not that great.
It's been a good run.
Yeah, I've had it for a while and I've better stuff to do now. So,
yeah. All right. We got one more voicemail from Mike. Go, Mike.
Hey, Squatchers. This is Mike from Las Vegas. So you guys mentioned you want to know your number spelled out. I ran it through something online and it said 21 Elf Gut 07. So that was the first part of the message. Second part is I wanted to reference the latest Rick and Morty podcast where you guys talk about squanchy culture and the Beth line where Rick explains the squanchy culture. Squanchy culture is more contextual than literal. You just say what's in your squanch and people understand. So after Beth tries to use squanch in a contextual way, and the Rick and Squanchy react, oh, stop saying it, gross. So what was in Beth's squanch? Thanks. I really enjoy your podcast. Keep it up. Thank you.
So I think if I remember correctly, Beth says, I squanch my family. And they're like,
Yeah.
I mean, I like this joke because it's almost as if when you say the word squanch, there's nothing you can do to hide your true intentions.
Yeah.
And so she probably said, I hate my family, or I detest my family, or I resent my family, or something like that.
But is that gross or just like, yeah.
What would be gross? What word could you fit in there that would be gross necessarily?
Well, can squanch mean a phrase? So could she have said, I want to have like a five-way with my family or something?
I guess, but it seems more Beth-like for her to be a narcissist and to dislike her family. But I guess it could be that. That's why I think it should have been more that like, oh, that's gross. It should be less, oh, that's gross, and more like, just stop it. That's awkward.
Okay. And is the reading of that episode then that she what she says is accurately perceived and then responded to? Or is there a reading of that in which she's not, she doesn't accurately say what she really wants to?
Well, it's weird because it seems like she's saying she believes that she's trying to say, I love my family, but I guess her true subconscious intentions come out, which I think is pretty funny.
Yeah.
And as far as the acronym, it's funny. I think a couple people have gone to that same site. So actually earlier today we recorded our South Park podcast and we've started saying, guys, hit us up at 21ElfGut07. All right. So before we go on, guys, I want to give a shout out to our sponsors over at Greats. Greats is Brooklyn's first sneaker company. Alec lives in Brooklyn. Alec likes shoes. So you guys should get some Greats like Alec. They offer men and women styles. They sell the Greats, classic styles made the best for less. Their best sellers include the all-leather Royale lace-ups and the Wooster slip-ons. They actually sent me a pair of shoes. I'm wearing them right now. They're the Bab V2s. They've been solid. I see Michael looking down under the table to see what I got going.
They're good looking.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And they fit great. So I'm probably just going to keep, as soon as these get too worn out, I'm going to just hit up the internet and then have them sent to me and never go to a shoe store again. Ryan got a pair. He got the Rosens. I know he's digging them. So save 15% off your first purchase with our code SQUANCH at checkout. And now back to the show. All right. Well, that's all we got. So, Alec, let's go right into the mailbag. You got some emails for us?
I do. Well, I have a few things. I got some Discord messages from our wonderful patrons, and then I got some emails.
Okay. Ooh. Let's do the patrons first.
Yeah. Patrons are more special to us. Just kidding. Or am I?
I'm not. So,
money talks.
So our first message is from one of our patrons who goes by the name of CC Collective in our Discord, which I think means communist cephalopod. There's a whole octopus thing going on. Don't ask too many questions. CC Collective asked, do you think it's possible in the fourth season that they'll expand on Morty taking over the Citadel?
I think at this point they're obligated to, maybe not in the fourth season. I mean, at this point they know that they have 70 more episodes to go. So I think that if they perhaps think that they don't have the best idea ready, they can say, oh, we'll just do that next season or the season after.
Yeah. I'd say, yeah, they have to. You have 70 episodes. I imagine they have like a board someplace with all these different themes they can pick up at random whenever they need to. So
yeah,
I'd be shocked if we never saw that.
They got 70 episodes. Everyone is obsessed with the fact that they continued Evil Morty. And for them to just pull up, just stop that now, they're not that cruel.
No. Cruel.
Yeah.
But not that cruel.
I also kind of imagine they're going to, like, a thing that Star Trek has done is they'll have like a Borg plotline, for instance, and they'll have like one or two episodes interspersed throughout seasons. So I imagine they might give us like one Evil Morty Citadel episode either every season or every other season. But when you watch them back to back, it'll be like a pretty cohesive, cool thing.
Yeah. Hey, Alec, do we have that email that someone sent us recently about Rick being a negative influence? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do. I think we'll get to it, though, because I got a lot of emails and I don't know what to control that for.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll get to that one. I've just been seeing a lot of that on social media as well, so I'm excited to get to that one. But anyway, let's just go on to the next one. What's next?
All right. The next one is from another patron, Fox Metro. With Beth claiming the family dynamic will be changing and that her fighting with Jerry is over, what sort of conflict at home could the Smiths have next season? What could possibly match the hilarity of chewing out Jerry and a broken marriage? And then ask, any philosophies or ideologies you're hoping for Rick to nut punch?
I think that there's still going to be, it's still going to be a tumultuous marriage. I mean, there's no way that they can, for the rest of the 70 episodes, just go strictly like beautiful Cosby Show marriage.
Yeah. Do we think there's a world in which like Summer gets a steady boyfriend or something?
Well,
or
doesn't
girlfriend?
She have one? What's his name? Eric? Or?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but doesn't Morty kill him in season 3?
Yeah.
Or does something crazy to him?
He definitely intimidates him, but we don't really see. It just kind of cuts away. He's like, you fucked with my sister. Bad move.
Yeah. But I just wonder if there's any person that will like come into the world and be more of a regular fixture, whether it's like a friend or a romantic partner, or I could even see them doing something really stupid. Like there's just like a cousin that randomly shows up and is on the show. They don't give context for, but I wonder if conflict could also come through the introduction of new characters.
I mean, that's like the whole joke of the Memory Parasites episode is of like of supporting characters just all of a sudden showing up without any explanation, which I can see that happening. I don't know. I in terms of family dynamics, obviously, I think Morty's still going to be sexually frustrated. Summer's still going to want to be popular. Jerry is still going to be useless. And Beth is still going to be kind of a closet sociopath. I just think they'll probably just think of new creative ways to do it. But I don't think that season three is some sort of turning point for Beth and Jerry or all the characters.
Wait, and you all have probably talked about this. Is the assumption that we are in an ageless universe where these characters are not aging?
I imagine it's like South Park.
Yeah, where that's what I assume. But then that's the only other thing that could be potentially interesting is if at some point Morty ages a little bit. But probably would ruin
it. It's early enough in the show to where they can make that decision.
Yeah.
In terms of philosophies that they'll nut punch, you got anything on that, Michael? You think that there's any philosophies that fit well with what they've talked about thus far that would maybe fit?
I feel like anything that's not a Rick brand of like scientific nihilism could work. But I don't know if there's anything in particular I want to see him nut punch. Because I feel like, I guess in a certain sense, that's what I'm less interested in because it's just going to get nut punched. And if I know it's going to get nut punched, I don't know how much I need to see that.
But what about just like literally an analytic philosopher just getting nut punched? How does that make you feel?
Oh, that's great. If you just had a literal character that's an analytic philosophy professor from like NYU or Oxford or something like that, and Rick literally punches that philosopher in the nuts and I'm psyched.
I would love to see a world where there's a Rick who's like a priest or something, or who's a religious leader or something like that, and then he has like a standoff with the scientist Rick. I think that would be
cool. I'd like some alternate universe or something where like he meets a person or a philosopher that actually holds a similar views but then hates him. Like I want to see a world where Rick meets like Friedrich Nietzsche or something like that and just finds him really obnoxious and makes fun of him.
Yeah, more than anything, I want to see the dimensions open up like a whole new element. So for example, if the universe or the multiverse truly is infinite, there's got to be a multiverse that is the world of Moby Dick or something, and they can go to the Moby Dick world, or there's a world that's Star Trek world and they go into Star Trek world. Like they can really do anything, and rather it be kind of either absurd ball sack face worlds or slight variations on their current world, I hope they do some pretty crazy different stuff.
Yeah, I want to see them go to You've Got Mail world
and
explore Fox's books.
Well, that's Alex's favorite movie.
Not really, but I enjoy it. There's it's actually favorite movie a to comment analyze. On the live stream from Cal Brucey. Sorry if I'm mispronouncing that. But Summer's boyfriend that we all are talking about is Ethan, the post-credit show that Morty turned him inside out with that beam. He's probably dead.
Oh, yeah. You can't survive inside out.
Well, but Summer and Beth do. Or, well, just Summer.
Does she?
Yeah, she gets a giant and inside out. Now, granted, I'm sure or Morty was there to cure her. Who knows if Ethan gets the same treatment. But, you know, it's also just one of those shows where nothing is really permanent. So,
good point.
Yeah.
The next patron on our Discord, I'm going to fuck this up. Gaigra, G-A-I-G-R-A. Do you think Phoenix Person will come back in season four as a season-long character or for just one episode?
I think at least one episode. He's got to come back. I mean, I didn't even think the fact that he wasn't in season three was kind of weird.
I wonder if he'll just be like a post-credits character, kind of like Mr. Poopy Butthole.
Phoenix, but Bird Person is such a beloved character. And I think it's kind of like Mr. Meeseeks, where like even though Mr. Meeseeks was a season one episode, and then after season two, they realized like, wow, that character got way more love than we would have ever thought just over time, and we should have brought him back. And I feel like something similar is happening with Bird Person, is that they kind of realize that he's such a beloved character. And I think they actually are pretty good at reacting to fans' desires.
You know?
And I think they strike a good balance of giving into what fans want, like with the evil Morty returning thing, without it just dipping into overt fan service.
Yeah, it's too good of a character to just leave on the cutting room floor. So
yeah, definitely.
This is my question. Do you think at some point Tammy will say, I eat cyborg dick?
I don't know. She's not undercover anymore. I mean, we have to assume that she's just really into I mean, if we have to assume that she was really into bird people, then we also have to assume that she's into robo bird people. And I don't know.
Yeah, where did we leave her? I'm trying to remember the end of that episode.
So, I mean, she escapes. And yeah. The last thing we see is when she is there when Phoenix person is awakened, like the Darth Vader. And I think she's basically the Palpatine stand-in who says, like, you know, are you alive or whatever.
All right. I think this is the email you're talking about. This is an email from Tanner. Hey, Squanchers. First, I just want to say that I have a medical illness that keeps me out of school, and your videos and content help me feel like I'm getting some sort of education. That's super awesome, Tanner. Well, I mean, it's not awesome that you have a medical illness, but I'm glad we could help, is what I'm saying.
That's a great name as well. I love the name Tanner. So,
yeah.
Good name.
Yeah, I got to be honest. I've never liked a Tanner. There have only been Tanners that I don't like, and I'm sure this Tanner is awesome, but I just got to be real with my personal experience. Yeah,
I always feel like Tanners are just like these like nice guys, kind of down to earth, friends with everyone types. I've probably met two, and I'm sure I bet this
you
got to
hook
like
me
that.
Up with some of your Tanners, dude, because my Tanners. No, bueno.
Back to the question from a Tanner, who I'm sure is a good Tanner.
Great, a good Tanner. Yeah. Go good Tanner.
So Tanner continues, in that vein, I was wondering if I could contribute an episode idea to you guys for a future episode of The Squanch, if when it comes back. Many times out in public, I find myself hesitant to admit that I like Rick and Morty due to the negative image that the most vocal part of the fan base portrays. I feel like this comes from an idolization of Rick, and I was wondering which parts of the show you would choose as less toxic examples. The end of the Pickle Rick episode comes to mind, but there has to be enough there for you guys to find in three seasons. I want to be able to prove to people that the show has some good messages under the fart and poop jokes, but the fart and poop jokes are the most memorable part. And then the little like tongue out face.
Yeah, it's this interesting thing. I've seen on social media a lot of people saying that, in the same vein of people saying that Cartman is the reason why there are shitty people on the right side of the political spectrum, people are also pointing to characters. Like, I even heard Michael Scott was put in this camp, which I don't get at all.
That's really weird.
Yeah, but also with Rick Sanchez being, you know, someone, it's a toxic figurehead. And I very strongly disagree with this. I think that the nature of idolizing a character, there is this escapist element. So, of course, you're going to... Part of the reason we like Rick Sanchez is because he can do and say things that we could never say in civilized society. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's the reason why it's cathartic. That's the reason why it's an outlet. We can like somebody that says and does things that we would never do. And images of those people doing things outside of what is socially acceptable are always going to be appealing for that very reason.
Yeah, it makes me think of like Mad Men, for example. Like, Don Draper is a bad guy. And of course, there were some people, well, at certain points, he's a bad guy. Certain people thought that was cool and like idealized this idea of like wearing cool suits, chain smoking, drinking whiskey all day and womanizing. But of course, like that's not the show's message at all. Like it's exploring the inner sadness of a character. And while Rick and Morty is not going to that level, I think I guess to get back to Tanner's question a little bit, I don't think we're ever going to have a world where you don't have fans like that for any given property.
Right.
And the best move seems to be to ignore that as much as possible.
There's a certain...
If you don't want to deal with it.
There's a certain cynicism that goes about... And this goes to like all basically complaints about representation in media or the way that media does this. There's the cynicism to it that I really can't stand. And that is that we've basically given up and just said that media basically controls our brain. People are affected by media. We can't critically look at these things and distance ourselves from reality versus fiction. Why is it that the answer is always, all right, well, Rick Sanchez is shitty, so we got to take him off television. Yeah. Why isn't the answer, we need to educate people to discern how media functions, what the business model makes, and like how you need to like critically consume media so that you're not turning into a shitty person, that you can watch images of things that are uncouth and not become that itself. Like why people don't talk about educating people about how to consume media and rather they talk too much about changing media because we've just given up and we're just like, all right, media basically is controlling us like puppets and there's nothing we can do about it. That's bullshit. Of course, there's something we can do about it.
People don't realize like you can be, and this is going to sound stupid, you can be good at watching TV or a good viewer of cinema.
Yes.
The same way someone who reads a novel and has a sense of literary form and function and the history of a certain genre is going to get a lot more out of it. Like if you just pick up a Joyce novel without any sense of what he's doing, it's going to make no fucking sense.
Zero sense.
But with television and film, we act like it's meant to just give us a literal presentation of something and we don't have to do any work. And also, that's not fun. Like, that makes us kind of dumb couch people that aren't critically interacting and engaging with media. I think you're right.
I think there's, it's weird. There's like a microcosm of this in that there's a few people in my life that I'm always trying to get to watch. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, Eastbound and Down, which is an incredible show we've never covered, and you should go watch
so
it.
Good. I love it.
So good.
I've seen it all twice.
Yeah. The thing about these shows is that these are terrible, terrible, awful people, but that's the joke. But when the people I'm suggesting to are like, oh, I don't like it because like the humor, like it's just too terrible. Like the things they're doing are disgusting. And I'm like, I know the things they're doing is disgusting, but that's the joke. And that's like the joke with Michael Scott as well.
Mm-hmm.
Is like, he's a bad person. He's a very, very bad person. And it's weird that some people could watch the same character. Rick Sanchez is a great example. And be like, oh my God. And Justin Roiland has said this. Dan Harmon has said this. Like, you're not supposed to idolize him. He's like a sad man who's an asshole to everyone. Similarly with like Dennis from Always Sunny, yeah, or Dee or any of these people. I guess like I don't have as many strong answers as Jared does, and that like I just think it's like interesting that two people can watch the same character and come away with completely different ideas. I think this idea of like, it's weird to say like I'm the one correctly viewing it and you're the one who's viewing it wrong, like, because that's what you're kind of saying with education. But I do think it's like an interesting problem how no matter what your intent is in an author, people will always find a way to like butcher it as much as possible.
I mean, there are certain things about Rick Sanchez that I find appealing, but that doesn't really change my behavior as a person. And another thing is that it's a cartoon with super sci-fi fantasy elements. I mean, even the Don Draper example, like, I mean, that's resembling some version, yeah, of reality. So I can, yeah, see how perhaps that would be an argument. I mean, it's still an argument that I disagree with if you're saying that Don Draper is problematic or whatever, because, I mean, that's the point.
Yeah.
It's displaying that version of time. But as far as Rick Sanchez, like, it's a fucking show about a guy who can portal to multiple dimensions. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, I as far as the education thing, media education, I mean, I'll soapbox on this shit all day. I think it's the most important thing in the world. Like, it's just as important as math and science. I know that the government wants to make sure that all of us are educated in math and science so, you know, we can advance as a society. But we're not going to advance to shit if people are too stupid to be able to consume the media that's inescapable and, yeah, our brains turn to mush.
It makes me so sad because one of my favorite TV writers was writing a book, Andy Greenwald, and it was slated to be called How to Watch Television. And then that pesky bastard got his own TV show that he's making now, so can't write his book on how to watch TV because he's going to make some TV. But I was so intrigued by that idea, like someone,
yeah,
taking it seriously enough to write a book that breaks down what it means to like consume television and think about it as a legitimate form of art.
And I think that television is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, it's like, yeah, how to be on Twitter, how to be on Instagram, yeah, you know, how to take all this stuff with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree with that. I think I just hone in more on the question of like how like writers are writing characters that are bad people. Michael Scott, Rick Sanchez, everyone from Always Sunny, and they're still people. And yeah, maybe it's media education, but we can move on.
Yeah. But good question, Tanner. And that's really cool that you're finding Wisecrack stuff useful.
And that's great that you're a good Tanner.
Tanner's part of the question, like, are there examples from the three seasons that I guess kind of disprove that? And the only thing I can think of is when Rick tries to kill himself, as in like, hey, look, he's not the hero. And I think Tanner said this, the end of the Pickle Rick episode, where he gets kind of undressed by Dr. Wong.
He's asking if there are examples that make it so that Rick is not a piece of shit. That's what he's asking.
No, not examples where, to me, Tanner's asking like, what are parts of it where it's not just reveling in Rick's shittiness? And I think
Some of the family stuff, I think for sure as well. Just like there's occasional moments where the family has some sweet times together and you see like real relationality emerging from the messiness of the modern family.
Anytime he saves Morty, I mean, yes, they undercut it with him saying, oh, I actually did it for an alternative reason, but that's a joke. I think that we are meant to look, like if you're looking at a strictly textual basis, yes, there's just as much evidence to suggest he doesn't care about the family that he does. But I don't know. I mean, I guess you can read it however you want, but I do think that he has a connection with the family and that he cares.
Yeah.
All right. The next one is an email from Madalena. Madalena.
So fun name.
Hi, Wisecrack. Have you considered, now that you're finished with season one and two, to look back on season three? I know you already covered all of season three episodes, but it was straight after each episode was released, and I think it might be interesting to analyze them knowing what comes next, as you did with the first two seasons. I think just one podcast might be enough, but it would be a different and interesting perspective.
I think a couple times when we were revisiting the episodes, we would bring up examples of season three that we would recontextualize after having revisited the seasons one and two. I mean, I guess we could do that. I definitely think that it wouldn't warrant, as she said, a revisitation of every episode in season three. That would probably be too much. But yeah, I mean, there were a lot of things that I was reminded of while going through seasons one and two again that made me think about things in season three again. But I've seen like every episode in season three like two times. And I feel like through our exploration of seasons one and two, I probably mentioned all those insights already. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I mean, I think there's probably a small group of people that would love that. I would probably enjoy them, their shows, but I don't know if there's quite enough there. Maybe it's something that, like, before season four, going back and doing a little recap to get everyone ready when that
drops.
That's
a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, we might do that whenever there's a release date.
I'm going to say my feeling is no. And I think the problem for me, and I suspect it's a problem with Jared, is just like revisiting it all over again. It's hard to have the excitement that you did the first time. And it's hard to do a fan podcast about a TV show when you're not excited about it. See a Westworld podcast.
Throwing your own podcast under the bus.
It's honorable, though, to be that honest.
It is honorable. Yeah. And I think now we can all say season two of Westworld, no bueno. Did you see it, Mike?
No, because I heard that it was so bad that I didn't bother.
It's bad.
There's a lot of stuff to watch when you hear
something's
bad. There
are some good standalone episodes, but as a whole, not good.
And now the set is gone, so RIP.
Yeah.
Sorry to bring
it
down.
And according to Leo, one of our writers, HBO changed its whole production model, and I think that after Game of Thrones ends, the days of things with production budgets that big are over.
Yeah.
Did you hear that too?
I heard something to that effect. So.
Yeah.
Yep. But still, a good question. I think that a lot of people would like something like that, but probably not happening, right?
No, I think we can. I think we'll do it before season four.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, a little primer. We'll set it down for a little bit and come back. All right. The next one's an email from Osama, who says, "Hey, Wisecrack, it's Osama. We all know that this dismal view of existentialism is already getting old. That being said, do you think Roiland, and it is Roiland, will try to incorporate other ideas into their nihilistic views? Maybe exploring ethics more deeply in the vein of Kant, or even the ideas of Camus? I don't know who that is, but fit nicely with the show's tone, albeit less depressing. I'm not a philosophy student, but an engineer, so be gentle. Just a thought. Keep up the good work."
Did you add the "and it is Roiland," or was that in the email?
That was in the email.
Oh, so do we know that?
The only thing I add is I don't know who Camus is.
Okay.
Kemet.
So we know that it's Roiland that's the existentialist?
I am skeptical of that because I feel like Dan Harmon is a depressed motherfucker.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's hard. He definitely has more of a body of work to be able to draw a conclusion from than Roiland.
But I wonder if Harmon, I mean, obviously his body of work it exemplifies a certain form of depression, but I feel like it's almost like a internal, not like self-hatred, but almost like a psychological or practical hopelessness.
Yeah.
Where maybe Roiland's the one interjecting this like cosmic meaninglessness to meet Harmon's sort of like personal struggle with meaninglessness.
They're just two miserable bastards.
Yeah. But I think that's a good question that I forget the name of the person that asked it. Sorry about
Osama.
That. Osama's question, like, because how much can you really do with hammering home that sort of nihilism and how can they explore that in different ways? And I know he brought up Kant, right?
He did bring up Kant.
I mean, that could be interesting to see how, like, where is there room for, like, constructive or ethical thinking in the universe we have in Rick and Morty, and where is there room for the characters to grapple with ethical ideas that don't always end with that sort of like dick punch, nothing means anything.
I feel like they'd have to make some pretty significant changes to the nature of the world, because this whole idea of the multiverse where you're infinitely unimportant because there's just infinite versions of you, and if you die, you can just get replaced by another version of you. I think that that cosmic pessimism is kind of baked into the foundation of the show. Now, that's not to say that they couldn't change that. I'd be down for some sort of a break in the physics of the world, and there's a Rick villain or something who is kind of counter to his views on the world. I think that would be awesome. But
or like, what if the Rick got stuck? If his machinery breaks down, they're stuck in the one universe in which they are a part of currently, and Rick has to reckon with living in the normal world with the knowledge that he has about what's out there or something. Like a couple episode arc like that could be interesting, maybe.
It's interesting to think about what Dan and Justin are grappling with when they know that it's not just that we have one more season to go. We know we have 70 episodes. And so since there've only been like so far, like maybe 35, we have, you know, 2x more episodes to make. And so with that much room to play, what Rick and Morty is can still be defined, you know, and what do they think Rick and Morty is? Is it a show that is kind of, you know, sci-fi, cosmic pessimism, absurdity? Is it a show just about a guy and his grandkid? They can change whatever they want. And as far as do I think they're going to make a big right turn, a kind of decisive turn this next season? I'd say probably not. I think they're probably just going to tinker with the formula just a little bit, probably just do some more episodic silly stuff that they just find funny. I do think that they're going to pull back on the existentialism because I think it was like really overt in season three, maybe even too much so. And so I think they're probably going to just try and make a silly show with sci-fi elements in season four, and we'll see where that gets them.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me of some of the problems, to quickly reference another show and move back, that like The Good Place has sometimes, like a show about philosophy as well, and that deals with existentialism. There's been points in the recent season of that show where it seems like the repeating the same philosophical themes is starting to ring a little bit hollow. So as a viewer, you want them to do something different with it.
Yeah.
So I wonder, I mean, I feel like that is a risk, and I feel like you're right, it started to happen a bit in season three. It's really cool to see if they can kind of avoid that in the upcoming season.
Yeah. What do you think, Alec?
I wonder, and this is a little bit in the show already, but the kind of nihilism, we know Rick is an anarchist, and I wonder if the philosophy will get like a little more political. And I don't mean political, like hot takes on the political issues of the day, but if, you know, Rick is this freedom fighter anarchist, I think all the criticisms we know he has of the Galactic Federation could maybe cohere into like a slightly more political philosophy. Maybe it's an anarchist philosophy, maybe it's a libertarian philosophy, maybe it's some other kind of political philosophy. But I think that could be interesting.
I think that would be cool, that if it was each episode was kind of more like the Purge episode. Now the Purge episode, you go on to a planet that functions like the movie The Purge, and it's more of a dig on the movie The Purge, but an idea that every universe that he enters has its own social and governmental structure that is then kind of broken down.
So almost
and
exploring like ideology a little bit more than just like a singular philosophical idea. I think that'd be really cool.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
you can't see me, but I'm rubbing my nose and sniffling.
Oh, okay.
I bet it's cute.
Oh. Yeah. I would love to see, you know, they could do like visiting Attack on Titan world, not literally the Attack on Titan world, but a world that grapples with political ideologies like that. And imagine Rick entering Attack on Titan world and trying to fix it or escape it or just fuck it up or something.
I like that.
Yeah.
Wow. Hopefully they're listening.
Yeah. Hopefully they're listening. Hopefully they're watching the live stream right now.
Uh-huh.
Because they got nothing better to do.
Just cracking some brews, watching the live stream, having a hell of a Thursday.
All right. What's next, Alec?
This is an email from Matthew. Matthew would like to connect on LinkedIn. How would you like to respond?
I don't have LinkedIn. Real email.
I also do not have LinkedIn.
That's a great source of pride for me.
I just think it's funny that someone clearly looked up Squanch at wisecrack.co on LinkedIn and was like, yeah, I want to connect with this person.
Wait, we have a LinkedIn?
No.
No, well, someone just
said. I think we've actually gotten multiple LinkedIn requests on our Squanch email, and I don't know how it works. So if anyone has done this, please tell
me. This happens, though, because I don't have a LinkedIn, and I will occasionally get a random email that's like so-and-so
wants to connect with you on LinkedIn.
Yeah, okay. And then we always end up just meeting up and having sex.
Oh.
That's not true. That's never happened. I just wanted to say it.
Does LinkedIn have a dating service?
I've heard of this happen. It's horrible. Sadly, it's mostly like creepy old men will find like young women on LinkedIn and try to swerve that way. I've seen a few women who have like posted the screenshots on social media, and it's just like
some guys, man.
Some guys.
Yeah.
There's also, it's like Tinder, but for professional networking. So in other words, like, oh, here's a software developer. My company like needs to know more about software development. I'm going to swipe right to have a coffee date with them. But that is not romantic at all.
You never know.
Didn't Tinder originally say that that's what they were too? They were a networking or connections company.
Yeah. Well, there was a point in which Tinder had like a setting about like wanting to make friends. And when I moved to the UK a couple years ago, I didn't know anyone at first. So I was like, huh. So like I download Tinder, not to cheat on my partner, if you're watching. But I was like, oh, maybe I'll try to like make some friends. And then I like matched with someone, and it was a woman, and she talked to me, and I was like, oh, I'm just looking to like make friends. And then she wrote this long thing that was like, this is really stupid. No one wants to waste time with some guy that just wants friends.
You fucking tease.
I know. And wow. Then we met up, and no. Nothing happened, but it was just a bummer.
Did she have the friend setting on too?
Well, it said, I literally said on my thing, I was like, just moved here from the Americas, looking to make friends.
Yeah, well,
in a committed relationship.
Back before online dating was a thing, I went on one strictly platonic mm-hmm. Craigslist meeting, and
yeah.
It's never strictly platonic.
No, because they want a kidney.
Also, Craigslist, man, come on.
Yeah, that was like pretty. I kind of want to hear more about
this.
This
is maybe.
It wasn't maybe pre later. Anything. We okay, know what yeah, Craigslist yeah. is.
It was like before there was no taboo to online dating.
Okay, I get what you're saying.
Yeah. Which was actually not even that long ago. I'm talking like 2011.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's not. I mean, that's still the era where I've like been to weddings for people who I know met online, mm-hmm. but they're from that era where. It was taboo, so they come up with some bullshit story.
Yeah.
Now I do appreciate that people at like weddings will just be like, yeah, we met on Bumble, had a nice coffee date.
Yeah, we're getting married. Of course, we met online. What are we, fucking caveman? Met in person?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a takeaway for anyone watching. Never talk to someone in person.
All right.
Yeah.
What's the next email?
This is an email from Daniel we're going to do first. It says, hello, guys. I was listening to your podcast, Show Me the Meaning. Shout out to that podcast and the episode Star Wars versus Star Trek, The Great Debate. And it was so fun. Would you consider doing an episode like this for the Squanch during the MPD months until season 4 comes out? Maybe debating themes brought up in the show.
Mm.
So like an internal debate to one property.
What do we think a subject would be like?
Resolved. You should cut off your dick to save millions of people.
Oh, well, we've already yeah. done that.
Yeah. If you splice together all the times, that's,
I don't know.
Discussed.
That could be kind of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I would want like a real professor of ethics or something to judge that debate.
Yeah, that'd be very fun to get someone that doesn't have a background or isn't a fan of the show. We give them minimal information and yeah. they judge that. That'd be fun.
What about a professor of Kierkegaard?
Oh, well, we got that in studio
right now. It's useless.
All right. What's the next email?
All right. This is a long one from Joel. Very long, but very good. So thank you, Joel. Hey, I'm a historian of the Ottoman Empire answering the call for a history of Unix. So brief aside, I don't even remember what we were talking about. I guess
it's
we're talking
great
about
the genital
debate.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we were talking about
how would it suck if you cut your dick off? And I was like, no, man, Unix. Yeah. They lived a cush life.
Mm.
Yeah. So the idea is they would cut off their dick and like serve with royalty, and they couldn't sleep with the royalty because they had no dicks. Well, the history of Unix is much darker, as Joel explains. Generally, in the case of royal courts, palaces, definitely the Ottoman court and also various Chinese imperial courts, eunuchs were bought as pre-prepared and therefore extremely expensive slaves while children. The Ottoman palace had two different sets of eunuchs, the black and white eunuchs. Black eunuchs were sourced via the Alexandria slave market. They'd be taken to the imperial palace to serve the harem. Slavers in what is modern day Uganda and Ethiopia would raid villages in those areas for boys aged roughly 8 to 10, and they needed to be comfortably before puberty. They'd be taken back to the slaver's camp and have their genitals removed with a machete. Also, FYI, this is going to get pretty graphic if you don't want to hear about dick cutting off, but here we go. A straw would be inserted to keep their severed urethra open.
Oh! Oh, my God. And I'm looking at a straw in the studio just for anyone, so I just thought about it.
No, it's probably like more like the coffee stirring straws.
Keep going.
Let's keep going. Keep their severed urethra open with the straws, though the removal of the penis would leave them permanently incontinent. and they'd be buried up to their neck in the desert sand to cauterize the wound. This is literally my nightmare. The death rate from bleeding, shock, sepsis, etc. for these boys was around 95%.
Ah! Wait, and what does it mean incontinent in that context?
You can't not pee. Like, you just, things leak out.
It just goes.
Okay.
You got a leaky wiener or wiener hole.
And then you're buried in hot sand to cauterize the wound, and you have a 5 in 100 chance of surviving this.
Yeah.
And would you want to? Oh, God.
Yeah. So anyway, the origin of white eunuchs is less well documented, but the likelihood they were boys captured in war, small scale raiding by one of any number of peoples in Eastern Europe, they'd end up on the Crimean slave market and be sourced for Istanbul from there. It's also not known whether white eunuchs who worked entirely around boys and men had everything removed or got to keep their penis. In China, during many dynasties, eunuchs as male servants.
There's more.
Yeah, this is an incredible email, and I have not fact-checked it, but I trust him for reasons I'll get to. In China, during many dynasties, eunuchs as male servants for the Forbidden City were demanded as tribute from neighboring kingdoms under Chinese... I don't understand that next word, but so I'm going to skip it. Vietnam was one country that historically was forced to send a lot of children as tribute to become eunuchs or female palace slaves. 18th and 19th century Chinese palace eunuchs had their severed penis and testicles saved and pickled, wearing them for the rest of their lives in powerful vinegar hanging around their necks. There's more.
Wow.
I just wanted to let the pickled dick necklace...
I'm going to have
pickle dick.
Oh.
Please continue, sir.
There is some evidence of adult men, mainly captured in war or by pirates, to be sold into slavery, voluntarily becoming eunuchs to advance in the service of their new masters. But my educated guess is that cases of genuine voluntary castration in order to achieve promotion were rare. One famous case is Samson Rowley, who converted to Islam and became a eunuch while in the service of late 16th century Ottoman regional governor Admiral Ulik Hasan Pasha, himself a former prisoner of war who had converted and who in turn was the protege of Admiral Ulik Ali Pasha, also a former captive turned convert. I hope this satisfies your lust for eunuchs, Joel, who is a doctor of philosophy candidate at the University of Oxford.
Heard of it.
Okay, Joel. he says that he is a scholar about the Ottoman Empire. Well, where's all this other information coming from? Like, he knows all this shit about China. You know what I'm saying? Like, it sounds like he's more of a professor of castration.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you, Joel.
I mean, you know, it's really great when we ask people for information and when they deliver in spades.
Be careful what you wish for.
Be careful what you wish for.
I just want to read some of the live stream comments.
Please do.
Pickle Dick Blast. Then someone said, my balls hurt so much listening to this. But wait, there's more. Oh, someone said the Chinese one had their teeth removed too. So we're getting a lot of things in the chat. Thank you everyone for commenting.
Thank you for sticking with us.
Yeah. And if you're in the chat, Google image search, all of it. And show it to your parents.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. we got more emails, Alec, or what?
We do. They're all much lighter than this. So here we go. All right. This one's an email from Retric. This is actually a response to the email talked about in the penultimate episode, season 2, episode 10. The guy that made the point about Alan Turing was saying that so this is about the great general debate, so everyone knows. Alan Turing saved a bunch of people, was chemically castrated. All right, now we can get back to the email. The guy that made the point about Alan Turing was saying that Alan Turing did a great thing that saved countless lives, which should have meant that he lived happily ever after as a hero. Instead, humanity found a way to make his life such a hell that he ended his life. The emailer's point was that he would not sacrifice his penis for the good of a universe that would very likely still find some way to screw him and his legacy. Thanks for the podcast. Wubba lubba dub dub. Squanch you later.
That's true, right? Because anytime in our world someone does a good thing, 24 hours later, the internet like roasts them because they'll find some random thing. So like, yeah, heroes don't really exist anymore. So why lose a dick when get dragged?
Oh, it was with you where it's funny you say that heroes don't exist anymore because when we were filming our Incredibles video, weren't we just like, who's a bad boy? And we were just like, we were just like, there are no bad boys. There are no like mischievous, winky rebels.
Yeah. Cause we have like genuinely evil people, but no like, winky bad boy.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess like, you could say,
because like, even if you like say like Logan Paul, is that who you were going to say?
No, I was going to say someone similar. I was going to say Justin Bieber maybe.
Oh, he's a bad boy.
Yeah.
But okay. I don't know enough about him. There's no like
cool
him.
Bad boys.
Yeah. Like there's no Vanilla Ice.
Yeah. Wait, but that's who you think a cool bad boy is?
I don't know. Maybe it's a little bit before my time.
Well, no, but like, even like a James Dean or a young Marlon Brando. Sure, or like
Rebels.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Vin Diesel. Why can't we just all agree on Vin Diesel?
That's where we discussed this. We got very close, I think, to saying Vin Diesel, but then someone said that maybe there was something that like
isn't
that's
Vin
really
Diesel
bad
just a
him.
Nice man?
So.
Yeah. He also plays D&D and agreed to make the like, latest triple X.
What is
so
a rebellious action character? Like what? Having a leather jacket and riding on motorcycles and smoking cigarettes, is that like bad boy these days, or is that just that's just cool? You're expressing your freedom. Good for you.
I think that's lame. It's my least favorite type of LA person who like they have like tons of money, but then they dress like they're like poor rock and roll stars and ride loud motorcycles. And I just want to think like you've never killed someone in a bar fight with a bottle, so you don't get to dress like this.
Yeah.
Sorry if any of those people are watching, but I guess they're not. I just know that they're not.
Yeah. 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 If you can think of any bad boys, let us know.
Definitely.
All right. So this is the last email of the Squanch.
Wow.
2018, seasons 1-3.
Wow.
Wisecrack.
Wow.
Ryan Haley, right. Michael Burns, Alec Opperman, Jared Bauer doing it. What is this last email? Give it to us.
This is an email from Joseph who says, "Hey, Squanch casters, as I've continued listening to old episodes almost a whole year ago, you discussed the existence of and serenity of Meeseeks. Jerry's original Meeseek claims to be alive for about 48 hours with the claim that that's an eternity in Meeseek's time. So if we assume that Meeseeks are given mundane tasks with the occasional Meeseeks that takes longer, like bets, I'd say that the Meeseek's average lifespan is around 30 seconds. If you do the math, the Meeseek that originally is tasked with helping Jerry has lived about 5,700 times longer than the average Meeseeks. Compare this to the lifespan of a person, this anguish would be approximately equivalent to living to nearly 450,000 years. Now, I am no historian, but according to my quick Wikipediaing, you'd have to have spent the majority of your existence in the Ice Age and would have witnessed all of recorded human history rise and fall with no visible end in sight to your anguish, or in Ryan's case, blissful, pointless existence. Just thought you guys would enjoy the math behind the Meeseeks' misery. Keep up the great work with all the different podcasts."
Well, he's right. I did enjoy that.
That's good, and that's cool. He wrote in, he had some facts. They were interesting. I'm thinking about some stuff. That's, wow.
Would you want to live for 450,000 years, Michael?
I'm going to say no. And I'm also going to say, I watched that Amazon show Forever with Fred Armisen and Maya Rudolph.
Mm.
I don't want to ruin anything because it's an interesting, it explores something similar to this. And it's made me think that no, life should be a finite period. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to get out before it starts sucking too much.
Yeah. Alec, would you want to do that?
You know, I recently read this Octavia Butler book about like this immortal, he's not really a vampire, but I'm going to call him a vampire anyway. And the book isn't about him being sad about this, but like it made me sad just reading it that he's been alive since like all recorded history. So I don't know. I think living like 1,000 years would be cool.
But even then, your friends and lovers will just die in front of you. Everyone, I don't know. It just sounds like it already makes me think of people who, you ever talk to like a grandparent sometimes who like outlive all their friends?
Oh yeah. And they just want to die.
They want to die so bad.
She's a wonderful woman, a great aunt. She's in her 90s and she's just like, yeah, she's perfectly healthy. She's like, yeah, I'm ready to die. I did everything I need to do. And I think when you get old, you just get kind of bored of everything.
Do you think if you knew, if you were living 1,000 years, would the days feel shorter? Like would time get somehow relative and it doesn't even,
yeah, they feel less consequential. Like I feel sometimes as a an older person, I guess, some days you wake up and you're like, hey, this isn't going to be around forever. My back hurts today. Something's sore. I should take advantage of youth while I still am clinging to it.
Mm-hmm.
If you have 1,000 years, I might spend 10 years just like catching up on watching Netflix. Movies and reading comic books.
Right. Yeah. And it would just, it would just go by super quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could see that.
Now I vote for euthanasia. That's my big takeaway.
Yeah. Yeah. I think on that note, we can end the squanch. We can euthanize the squanch. All right, guys. If you guys want to keep up with us until season four comes out, we got a couple other podcasts going. We got our movie podcast, Show Me the Meaning, which we're doing every week. We just recorded an episode on Nicholas Roeg's Walkabout this week because Nicholas Roeg died over the weekend. Last week we did, what did we do? Oh, we did Mandy with Nicolas Cage. The week before that, we did The Dark Knight. So we're doing movies every week. Catch us over there. It's on iTunes, Stitcher, whatever. We're also currently doing our South Park podcast because South Park is on the air right now. So we've got about three more episodes to go until the season ends, and we might do another mailbag episode for that. And yeah, also Greg, aka Sparky Sweets PhD, who's also on the movie podcast, is doing his own comedy podcast called Blackstage. You can also check that out on all those places I just listed. And we will see you guys for season four of Rick and Morty whenever that happens. So where can we find you guys on the internet? Michael.
If you would like on Twitter, I am at Michael O. Burns.
Oh, wait, so you changed it from Mick O'Brien?
I changed it. I wanted it to be really obscure when I was more involved in like teaching and academic stuff. And now I don't care anymore. So I made it easier for people to find me if they want to mock me and tell me my life is meaningless.
Yeah. Any of those Kierkegaard groupies, now you know how to find them.
Yeah.
And Alec.
You can find me on Twitter at WisecrackAlec. I tried to make a joke about the Mandarin duck today, and Burns was the only one who liked it.
I really liked it. I genuinely liked it. That wasn't just like a sympathy.
Literally no one else did. So if you want to see that humorous attempt, yeah, check it out.
All right, cool, guys. This is The Squanch signing off. We'll see you guys at season four. Peace, everyone.
Bye.
All right.
Let me say bye again. Squanch you later.